As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hi there and welcome to The Athletic Football Podcast. This is the weekend preview and it is match day 11 in the Premier League. So welcome along. Many thanks to Tim Spears for standing in on last week's show. I listened to that during my break whilst I was off. And two things I just wanted to quickly point out. One was congratulations to Ruben Pinder. 3-0 prediction on the Manchester Derby. He was bang on. The second thing I just wanted to just flag, it was suggested by Tim that I spent my entire break watching episodes of The Repair Shop. And I feel like we need to have a bit of a repair shop amnesty. We need to stop talking about it. And I also need to confess to the fact that it isn't something that I watch. So I just wanted to just try and leave it alone. Let me introduce my guests on this week's show. It is a warm welcome back to the Big Smoke to Jacob Whitehead, who's been up in Newcastle, but you're now back in London and first time on the show. How are you?
I'm good. I sort of feel a bit like a travelling footballer who's been sent on loan for 6 months back to make their debut for kind of a full side.
So
big day for me, big day.
Well, you've done some great work up in the northeast, and now you can come back and, you know, set the capital alight with your work. It's fantastic.
We'll reveal how little of kind of a wider Premier League I've actually managed to follow since covering Newcastle. So yeah, exactly. There's a few things which I am still lost on. So we'll hope.
Yes, we will be talking about Newcastle. Luke Bosher is back in Hipster Corner. This is an audio experience for everyone watching, but boy oh boy, you have a snazzy sweater on. It's green, it's yellow, it's got basketball written on it, and you look a million bucks, Bosch. How are you?
I'm very well, Adam. I don't think I could ask for a warmer introduction. Delighted to be sitting alongside Jacob, who makes me feel like a relative podcast veteran.
Yes.
Of the Athletic studio, but excited.
Speaking of podcast veterans, it's Nick Miller. You've come back. Are you? Where the bloody hell have you been?
I don't know. Have I been away for long?
Feels like it.
Well, that's just because of our deep relationship. You know, even a small amount of time away feels like a lifetime.
It is. You are my sidekick, aren't you, after all?
Oh, God. This again.
No, that can also go in the amnesty. With Repair Shop. Right, let's get stuck in. It's your fixture formation. 7-2-1 from Saturday to Monday. Saturday's early kickoff is Fulham 14th, 1-5 against the crisis club, Manchester United. 8th, back-to-back defeats. Erik ten Hag under huge amount of pressure. That's at 12:30. 5 Saturday, 3 p.m. It's 10th against 9th, Brentford against West Ham. Manchester City in 3rd against Bournemouth in 17th. They do have a win now, Bournemouth, so well done to them. Bottom with only 1 point, Sheffield United. They take on 12th place Wolves, unbeaten in 5 for Gary O'Neill, going along great guns now. 19th place Burnley, 8 defeats out of 9. They take on Crystal Palace, who can't score. 15th in the table, Everton on a bit of a quirky run at the moment. They've lost one, lost one, lost and won. So they are due to lose against seventh place Brighton. The Saturday evening kickoff, which we'll talk about in a moment's time. Newcastle in sixth up against second place Arsenal. And then two games on Sunday. It is 16th place Nottingham Forest. No win in six against fifth place Villa. And it is 18th place Luton Town against fourth place Liverpool. We'll talk about that one a little bit later. That's your 4:30 on Sunday. And then finally, cracking game on your Monday night football. It is Tottenham, top of the lot, against 11th place Chelsea. Poch going back to Tottenham. Let's start though on Tyneside. So Newcastle against Arsenal is the late kickoff on Saturday, and two teams with contrasting emotions from their Carabao Cup exploits. Jacob, let's come to you first. As we've mentioned, you've been covering Newcastle so far this season. A bit of an injury crisis for them at the moment, but I suppose that the game against Manchester United, that 3-0 win in the Carabao Cup, it showed that there is great depth. There are players that want to come in and prove a point. It seems to be a very sort of cohesive ship at the moment under Eddie Howe.
Yeah, it was remarkable against Manchester United, because when he named that 11, it was almost as if Howe had been given a challenge to name the weakest 11 he could out of the first team squad. Like, he picked six fullbacks in the starting 11. They had a starting centre-back combination of Paul Dummett and Emil Kraft, who have made a combined one start between them in 18 months. That pair sort of manages to empty Old Trafford by 70 minutes. It was absolutely remarkable and does kind of show the spirit they've got in this squad, because injuries are starting to take a toll. They added a bit of depth, but all of those pieces they signed in the summer are out for one reason or another, whether it's because of injury like Harvey Barnes or because of suspension like Tonali. Through it all, they've sort of managed to keep going, a couple of kind of awkward tools in the league, but the Arsenal game is kind of a real test of their mettle, like the first choice 11 which they have going against Arsenal.
In terms of Tonali, who you obviously mentioned, you know, he's banned long term. It's going to be the third game without him. Obviously, he's not started his last four. For people that haven't been sort of dialed into exactly how they've remedied the situation, who has been playing instead, and what is the plan long term?
Yes, it's been really weird, because Tonali, after 6 minutes, scored on his debut, looked $1 million, and then really struggled to kind of listen to instructions, but to kind of execute the quite complex midfield demand which Howe puts on him. And so that meant that in the first international break, Tonali dropped out the side. Sean Longstaff, who was one of the stars last season coming back into the side, took his place as number eight. So they've got a midfield trio of Bruno Guimaraes in the number six role, and then Jolinton and Sean Longstaff playing ahead of him. And that's just kind of settled it a lot more with the balance. Tonali's come on and made some cameos, but that's just kind of been the settled trio. The danger is that after that trio, they don't really have any depth at all. This is going to be the second game in a run of four matches in 11 days. And asking the same trio to kind of play all of those games, Guimaraes came on quite early against Man U last night. That's kind of the real test.
But it was a cakewalk against Manchester United anyway, so it didn't really stretch them too much. Just a quick word on that game, Nick. You know when things are bad, when you can actually see the writing on the seats. Which, and I mean, as Jacob mentioned, they cleared the ground pretty much from around about 70 minutes onwards. But I mean, we'll talk a bit more about Man United later, but that picture just spoke 1,000 words, didn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, you could pick many things to sort of sum up the malaise of Manchester United, but that third goal that Joe Willock scored, which is, you know, great run, really excellent finish, but it was like they had almost cleared a path, which, you know, I think fans can cope with teams playing badly and losing, but that sort of thing was just embarrassing. And also, it's kind of slightly similar to one of the goals they conceded against Man City, when, you know, I forget who it was allowed to just kind of wander through, have a shot, which was and then it was saved and they scored the rebound. A sorry state of affairs at Manchester United.
We've been sidetracked just by sort of moth to a flame to a crisis talking about Manchester United. But let's get back on track with Newcastle against Arsenal. And Luke, this feels like a real litmus test for Arsenal, because it's the first time that they've had an away game against a side in the top six. And the as we mentioned, you know, the mood after the, after midweek feels very different around those two sides.
Yeah, but I don't think Arsenal will be too disheartened after that result. Obviously, 3-1 at West Ham, it's not a great, it's a pretty poor result. But I think Arsenal have, you know, they've already played a lot of tough games this season. You know, we've just spoken about United, but Arsenal have beaten Man United this season. They've
That doesn't mean anything. Does it?
I mean, it means a bit. It means a bit. This was United early
it's just
September.
Another game nowadays.
It was pre-crisis, I think.
Okay,
it
fair enough.
It was pre-crisis.
Okay.
They've drawn with Tottenham. They beat Manchester City. I mean, that was a fantastic result. Their biggest game of the season, and they won it. They drew with Chelsea. They struggled against Chelsea, and for me, that was one of those games that was the mark of like a team that is very together and is very confident in itself. Because I was watching that 2-2, and Arsenal were 2-0 down, but they didn't panic. It didn't feel like they were out of the game. And you know, the two goals that they got, you could argue both were sort of fortunate in their own right, but especially the Declan Rice goal. But the point is, Arsenal was still there, and I think Mikel Arteta will take great heart from that kind of result, and I think Arsenal will return to more of the form that we've been accustomed to over the kind of past 12 to 18 months against Newcastle.
I think this is also a test, this specific fixture, which Arsenal have already overcome. There's that really famous loss at the end of the 21-22 season where Arsenal were pushing for the top four at St James's Park, where sort of Newcastle revealed the team they could be. It was immortalising the All or Nothing documentary, sort of Arteta's anger. And at the end of last season, Arsenal visited, still kind of chasing the league at that point, with Newcastle pushing for the top four. And the expectation was that the atmosphere at St James's Park and the intensity of Newcastle could lead to a similar result. But Arsenal really actually were stood up and counted. They kind of took Newcastle on directly at their own game. They kind of went into the dark arts and managed to sort of really shut up St James's Park. And they won that game. And so it's a very similar trip now, but in a way it's a test they've already passed. They've kind of already exercised some of their demons from this particular match.
And Arsenal, in particular against Newcastle, have a very good record as well. So they can rely on that, however much past records actually mean anything. In terms of the styles of the two sides, Jacob, I'll ask you about Newcastle in a moment, but are we sensing a difference in this Arsenal side? Obviously against West Ham, we saw with, you know, Declan Rice dropping out, Saliba dropping out, that spine was a little bit more shaky or it was non-existent. Do you think that they've hardened up, they've changed what they're all about this season?
Maybe a little bit, but they definitely seem more solid, which I think is probably just it's another year of Saliba and Gabriel playing together. It's that having Declan Rice in front of them, who's kind of an upgrade on Thomas Partey and Jorginho. You kind of compare them to how they were at this stage last season, when they were sort of completely rampant, everyone was having an absolutely wonderful time, and they looked, I was sort of still pretty convinced they were going to win the league until quite sort of late on in the season. But you wonder whether you could look at that one of two ways. It could either be, you could either say, well, they're not as good as last season, or you could think of it as they're just sort of maybe pacing themselves a little bit more. Couple of those games that they've won so far, they've won quite late, Manchester United and Manchester City. You wonder whether they are just a little bit, I don't know, smarter about things. Maybe that's complete nonsense and they are just a bit more rubbish, but you know. Well, I'm looking at the positives, Adam.
Yeah, quite. Have Newcastle changed particularly this season from what they were doing last season?
I mean, they've basically got the same 11 as last season, as this season, with all of the injuries and absences they have. But, you know, there has been this change. They're scoring a lot more from, like, last season, having one of the best defences, which has maybe been harmed a bit by the absence of Sven Botman for the last month or so, and he's expected. I mean, his return isn't imminent at all. And then just scoring-wise, it was absolutely fired by their 8-0 demolition of Sheffield United a couple of months ago now. It is Sheffield United, but it did kind of spark something. In Isak and Wilson, they've got two strikers who are absolutely, you know, banging form. I think Nick actually spoke about kind of Alexander Isak being the least important of the most important players, kind of in that he's clearly a brilliant player, but take him out of the team and Newcastle don't really drop off. Added into the form of Anthony Gordon, who having not really played a part last season, is arguably Newcastle's player of the season this year. And you've got this team who've actually kind of really added this kind of multifaceted approach to their play. Before, they only progressed the ball through the right wing and then swung it in through Trippier or Guimaraes. Now they're actually creating on the left through Gordon and centrally through kind of Isak or Wilson dropping deeper to link play.
Yeah, and they it's interesting you mentioned Gordon. Obviously, you know, we saw him perform really well for Everton, your team, the team that you support. We like to out people here, the way. That's okay. That's fine.
I mean, normally when I'm on Pod on the Tyne, I'm having to be the anti-Newcastle voice, whereas here I suddenly feel like I've been transplanted to kind of be this Newcastle apologist. It's a completely new role for me here.
No, it's good. I like it.
I did notice you were wearing green and white. I did wonder what that was for.
In terms of, you know, you mentioned strikers there. Callum Wilson, obviously, in great form. 3 in his last 4. It's interesting, you look at this fixture, maybe one of the subplots is sort of like the backup striker for England. Eddie Nketiah scored a great hat-trick against Sheffield United. But no goals in 10 games prior to that. In terms of their standing, do you think Eddie Nketiah still has quite a long way to go to even sort of be competing with Callum Wilson in that conversation of, you know, being on the plane to Germany, etc.?
Well, as Jacob said, I think when it's Sheffield United, you almost have to caveat it with, but it was against Sheffield United. And I think, you know, in that defeat last night, Eddie Nketiah played 80 minutes and didn't play well before getting hooked. And it wouldn't surprise me if Mikel Arteta did not start him against Newcastle, just to, not for the sake of mixing it up, but I don't think he would have been happy with how Nketiah performed, albeit with, you know, without, you know, other first choice players around him. And I think there's a chance that Kai Havertz maybe starts in the number 9 role, a position he played quite a lot at Chelsea, or even someone like Leandro Trossard, who, when Gabriel Jesus was out last season, played there a little bit and combined quite well with Bukayo Saka on the right and Gabriel Martinelli on the left, because he offers a little bit more link play. You know, I'm not saying that Nketiah is, you know, a bad technical footballer, but, you know, Trossard has the ability to kind of drop in a little bit more and kind of move around. But in terms of England, going back to your point, Adam, I do think Wilson, when fit, is almost a lock behind Harry Kane. It'll be interesting when Ivan Toney returns from his ban in January, whether he can get enough games and goals together for Brentford or for whoever else to make his case.
We have to just say, maybe just in defence of Nketiah, there is, 7 years between Nketiah and Callum Wilson. So, yeah, you're maybe sort of erring towards the experience and a stronger body of work. And
a little bit, yeah. But if you look at their sort of careers at top level, it's broadly similar. Wilson's come up from, you know, playing in the Championship, League One, to Premier League with Bournemouth and not really getting noticed and having to put in those hard yards, whereas Nketiah has spent his whole professional career at Arsenal. He's been in the side for 5 or 6 years. So in terms of that kind of element of their CV, I think they're sort of matched a little bit.
I think you're being quite harsh on Eddie Nketiah. I think you should just give him a chance. Just lay off him. Just give him, you know, break.
The cynics may say that.
Oh, you're going again? Come on. Yeah,
the cynics may say that.
Well, they were.
England Southgate gave Nketiah that call up because, you know, there's potentially a fight for his international future.
Oh, wow. So you've undermined him further. He didn't even deserve his England call up. Fantastic.
Well, he's a warm body.
A warm body. That's your saying, of course. Yeah, that's very, very true.
Hang on a minute.
Hold fire there. In terms of criticism of your strikers, you described Dominic Calvert-Lewin as a warm body up front. Did you not?
It was better.
Oh, it was better. Okay, fine. But you did say that you can't rely on Dominic Calvert-Lewin and all that sort of stuff. You said he's not worth persisting with. And then he goes and scores, you know, almost like a Puskás award goal against West Ham. So shows how much you know,
quite Boj. Frankly.
Anyway,
slander.
Moving on, just fade him down. Right, so let's go through with our predictions. Jacob, first up from you.
1-1, but I'm locking in a red card. It's been really testy the last two fixtures, especially midfield. I think someone's going.
Who? Come on, be specific.
Declan Rice.
Ooh.
Declan Rice.
Rice red. Come on then.
I was also going to say 1-1, so I'm still going to say 1-1.
Yeah,
and for the narrative, just because Nketiah is going to score.
Yeah, good. That's good. Nick?
I think Newcastle will win. Maybe it would be close, but maybe 2-1.
2-1. We shall see. Right, next up for us, Spurs, welcome back an old friend.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So the Monday Night Football is Tottenham against Chelsea, and it is a return for Maurizio Pochettino. Does anyone remember his last game in charge of Tottenham? I will throw it out to the crowd. I Googled it earlier on. I'm no better than you. I'm just asking if you remember it.
It was, must have been around this time. I can't remember who it was. Around this time of year, though.
Yes.
It was in November, wasn't
yes.
it? Yes. Don't know. Yeah, I don't know who it was.
It was 1-1 against Sheffield United.
Yeah,
1-1 against Sheffield United. Do you remember where you were? I mean, it's not quite JFK, but do you remember where you were when Pochettino was sacked and Mourinho, his replacement, was appointed?
No. No, Mourinho, I think, was appointed quite late at night, so I'm going to say I was in bed.
Well, I might have got the timing slightly wrong with this, but I remember where I was when Pochettino got sacked. I was about to go on a postal run with the former Leeds United and Watford defender John McClelland, who is now a postman.
It's classic early Athletic pieces.
Yes, it really was. It really was. I went, it was actually quite good. It was actually quite good. Yeah, it's still available for you to read in the back catalogue. So it's sort of gone south since Pochettino left. And it got very toxic under Antonio Conte last season. And now it's all shiny and happy under Ange. What kind of reception, Boesch, do you think that Pochettino will get at Tottenham?
I think he will get a mixed reception, to be, you know, on the fence about it. I think a lot of Tottenham fans will remember the good times under Poch. I mean, he was really the head coach that kind of took them to the next level, as it were. The Champions League final, that's something that Tottenham fans, I think, I don't think I'm being unfair, that wouldn't have been dreaming about, you know, 5 years beforehand. But, and I know Pochettino, obviously, came to Southampton first in England before going to Tottenham, but I think that was the club that kind of, you know, really enriched his reputation worldwide as a top level football coach. So I think he'll have good feelings going back. But at the same time, I think there were, and probably still are, a section of the Tottenham fan base that were unhappy that he chose to go to Chelsea, who are one of Tottenham's closest rivals after Arsenal. So I think there will be cheers and there'll be boos. It's Monday night as well, so it's possible that one or two people at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium may have had a lager shandy or two, and that may impact the kind of reception that Pochettino gets.
Does Pochettino wear a Chelsea blazer?
He varies between...
Hang on a minute, sorry. I've just asked, maybe that's a bit of a stupid question. Do any managers wear a blazer with their own badge? Or they don't, do they? Certainly, I'm thinking probably only Sean Dyche wears a club tie nowadays.
Yeah. Any current managers wear...
Poch wears a bit of... He can be a bit club shoppy in that, you know, he'll wear a track jacket and, you know...
Klopp is club shoppy,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He's massively club shoppy.
Thomas like Frank's quite club shoppy as well.
Who?
Thomas Frank's quite club
shoppy. Gary O'Neill, very, very club shoppy.
No, I wouldn't say he's club shoppy. I'd say he's just sort of like standard player garms. So I don't think he's...
In 6 months covering Newcastle, I never saw Eddie Howe wearing anything but black and white. It's like he's contractually obliged. He was only ever in club shop gear when he's on official duty. And then he went to open the Great North Run in boiling sunshine and was wearing an all-black turtleneck and suit get-up.
Really?
Yeah, wow. That man is either a secret goth or just has absolutely no imagination when it comes to any sort of sartorial elegance.
Okay, let's talk about Spurs, because I wanted to gauge your opinions, all three of you, what side of the scale you're on. So we know Tottenham, top of the table, 8 wins out of 10, 26 points from a possible 30. Last season, interestingly, they'd taken 23 points from a possible 30 and they were in third. They've found a way to win games. Some have been late, some have been a little bit haphazard, but they've got those wins. Where does each of you stand on that they are genuine contenders, or it's all going to go to the proverbial very, very soon and they're going to fade away scale? Nick, I'll start with you.
Minor cop-out, but I think that, like, the next few games might be a kind of a good sort of test of that, because obviously the thing that people kind of quite rightly said is that their first 11's very good and their squad might be a little bit thin. But they're going to have to... They have played a couple of games without some of their key players. Bissouma was missing for, I think, just one game, which they won. Destiny Doggy was out and for the Crystal Palace game. I think he might be... I think he's sort of 50-50 for this one as well. How they will cope without kind of key players is the thing that will probably decide, you know, whether they do kind of keep this up. The other thing, I suppose, is that is players, I don't know whether we might get to the kind of over-reliance on Madison and Son, but other players around those two.
Why don't you get into it now?
Okay, fine.
Brought it up, get into it.
Richarlison and Kulusevski, either side of Son, haven't really contributed a huge amount tangibly. I mean, Richarlison can't really score. Kulusevski seems to have stopped shooting. There's been a few games where he's had I don't know whether he's got the yips or he's some sort of crisis of confidence, but he doesn't seem to be even attempting shots at the moment, which is a little bit concerning.
There is a piece out on The Athletic at the moment. It was a mailbag piece, actually, that Charlie Eccleshare has done, and he talks about some of the transfer plans for January and centre forward or someone out on the left, potentially, depending on what Ange Postecoglou and the new recruitment setup want at the club, are likely to be the targets for January. Centre-back as well, potentially. And just a little, I'm going to blow my little trumpet, if you don't mind. There is a piece also which I wrote, an interview with Leonardo Gabbanini, who's the former chief scout and stand-in sporting director at Tottenham, and he talks about some of the recruitment that they've done and the reasons for that. Mickey van der Ven, for example, describes him as like Erling Haaland, but a defender. It's an interesting one for you. I hope, anyway. Luke, on this sort of situation with how far Spurs can go, obviously you're a massive Chelsea fan. Where do you stand? Are you hopeful that they do well?
I mean, much like a lot of people on Twitter,
I know you're going to be lying now, whatever you say, but go on.
I actually do quite like Ange Postecoglou. I think he comes
across
so well.
Yeah,
in every single interview presser that he does, he's just the sort of bloke that you'd love to just get a beer with, really. But on Spurs, I've been really impressed with them this season so far, and even though they had relatively kind fixture schedule. I know they've played Arsenal, they've played Man United, who are Man United, so we don't count them. And they beat Liverpool, albeit in somewhat controversial circumstances. You know, they're unbeaten after 10 games, and I think it's impossible to not put them in the, you know, title conversation now. But as Nick kind of alluded to, you know, if they lose 3 on the bounce, then they probably won't be in that conversation anymore. So the next run of fixtures will be pretty crucial for them. But I think
we've mentioned the next run of fixtures. Shall I tell the listeners who maybe aren't aware what the next fixtures are?
Yeah, you love fixtures.
I do love fixtures. It's sad, isn't it? So obviously they're playing Chelsea on Monday. Then they go to in-form Wolves, which will be interesting. Then they play in-form Aston Villa. And then they play always in-form Manchester City, followed by West Ham, who hate them as well. And then they play Newcastle. So it's one hell of a run, actually. So you were right to point it out, Nick. And you were right to pick up the baton, Bosch. Jacob, let's come to you. Where do you stand on Spurs? Obviously, Bosch would stand on their faces. Where do you stand?
Yeah, well, Bosch is a Chelsea Ranger who likes to live a life of danger.
Yeah.
So it's quite a struggle to pick up on that. It's just kind of picking up on also what Nick said earlier, kind of, about them dealing with the odd injury. I think that's actually what I've been really impressed by. Kind of all the stuff we were hearing about Postecoglou before he came in was how he was always, if plan A isn't working, do plan A even better. And they've managed to straddle a really good line in games where they have actually managed to adapt and be pragmatic without still losing those key fundamentals. And it's quite a difficult thing to do. And we're kind of seeing it a little bit with Man United at the moment, how sort of as soon as Ten Hag was trying to move away from his Ajax principles, it suddenly sort of became really, really uninspired football. And so far, Tottenham have been able to do that. Like, yes, of course, this will be a litmus test. I feel like we're talking a lot about litmus today.
Did anyone do a litmus test at school? That's the blue one, isn't it? Is that the dipping?
Alkaline and acidity tests, yeah.
Good. As you were, carry on, Jacob. Sorry to interrupt.
I think I pretty much ground to a halt there. I mean...
yeah, I'm done. I'm out. Jacob's walking out of the studio.
That's cool. Well, having done the litmus test, just drop your little paper and away you go.
That's what I did, and that's why I dropped chemistry after GCSE. They won't have me back.
There you go. Perfect. Let's switch, because obviously you were making a serious point there, that they have a clear identity, Tottenham. Let's switch over to the Chelsea side of things and pop over to Bosch Corner and find out whether Chelsea do have an identity at the moment. Do you think that they are sort of moving in the right direction, continuing to sort of develop these young players and knit them together? Is there any sort of doubt in your mind about Poch?
No doubts. From me, I think the Brentford game was a really interesting one because their first goal kind of came a bit out of nothing, and then obviously the second goal, Sanchez goes up, they score on the break, open goal.
Funny goal though, wasn't it?
Oh, I mean, very funny.
Very
funny. It needed like Benny Hill music, I think, something like that.
But Robert Sanchez, he's quick, isn't he?
Yeah.
Really quick. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
But I think, and Pochettino was keen to emphasise after the game, and to an extent I agree with him, that Chelsea's results have been kind of up and down this season. They've had some absolute stinkers, but they've had some very good ones as well, drawing against Liverpool, drawing against Arsenal. And I think he's right in that the performances have been more consistent than the results, and I think Chelsea have played well in a lot of games, and that almost stems a little bit back to last season when Chelsea were, you know, the XG kings but couldn't find a goal to save their lives. I think Chelsea are building something, but because of, you know, the average age of their squad, you know, the relative lack of minutes that they've played together, I think it's always going to be a bit of a struggle. And, you know, you have to have a little bit of patience, and you have to, you know, you have to accept that those young players are going to make mistakes. And because, you know, they're 21, they're 19, 18, whatever.
Do you want a stat on that? I'll give you a stat. Chelsea have given more minutes to players age 21 or younger in the Premier League than any other side this season. That's 2,941. So that is a positive thing. But the stats on Chelsea this season, and they will want to see the back end of 2023 because it has been an awful year. Here are some of them. They've lost 15 Premier League games this year, only one fewer than they lost in the 2021 and 2022 years combined, which was 16. They've got 8 points fewer than they did last season. And since Graham Potter was sacked, Chelsea have won the fewest games, only 4, and accumulated the joint fewest points, 18, not including clubs relegated last season. So the only way is up, I suppose. And let's see if our predictions on this fixture reflect that optimistic view of how Chelsea are going to do against top of the table, flying high Tottenham. Jacob, let's start with you. Your prediction.
2-0 Spurs.
Brilliant. Let's wait. Let's leave Bosch to the end. Nick?
Well, I was going to say 2-0 Spurs as well.
Okay.
So I could change it for the sake of variety.
No.
I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, go with it.
I'm going to stick with it. Okay. 2-0 yeah. Spurs.
2-0 Spurs. And Bosch.
I'm going to go 2-1 Spurs.
Oh. After all that, moving in the right direction, yeah. Chelsea looking good, blah, 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 they're still going
to
lose.
You have to be realistic.
Fair enough.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
So, Sunday, 4:30, everyone gets to see Kenilworth Road in all its glory once again. It is Luton hosting Liverpool. Unfortunately for Luton, they slipped into the relegation zone last week after they lost to Aston Villa. Bournemouth beat Burnley. So the three promoted teams now take up all three of those relegation spots. I want to work out two things now. I think we're all sort of thinking that Sheffield United are definitely going down. They've got 1 point from 10 games. It is not looking good for them. Out of the two teams that are also in the relegation zone, Burnley and Luton, do we feel that Luton are the most likely to stick their head above the water and survive at the end of the season, Nick?
100%, yeah.
Why?
Well, because Burnley seem to be doing kind of the same things as they were doing last season, but yeah. against much, much better players, but with only slightly better players. So that there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of like appetite for changing things or being a little bit more pragmatic. And it's a style of football that when it works,
yeah,
it's brilliant. But Premier League teams are very used to dealing with it, and they have dealt with it very well. Luton are slightly different. The quality of their players is probably slightly lower, but they have a style of play which teams maybe aren't so comfortable with facing. So I think from that, I still think it'll probably be the three that will go down, but I think Luton will be the closest to staying up, and they've certainly just from that style of play, I think we've mentioned this before, they will take a few points off some teams, as they could have already have done against Liverpool. Probably not, but of the three of them, I definitely think they've got the best chance of staying up.
Bosch, have you been to Kenilworth Road?
I have.
Did you
both
like
as a supporter and a journalist?
As a supporter of Chelsea?
No, as a supporter of Wycombe Wanderers.
Ah, okay.
Back in the heady days when Luton were in League One.
Going there as a sort of a well-heeled Premier League fan, now dropping into a stadium which is from like another era, another world. Some would say, if you were of a Watford persuasion, you would say it's from another planet. How do you find it? Do you feel that it has the potential to become a bit more of a cauldron?
Not especially.
Is it not intimidating enough? Because from my point of view, I've only ever been there in a very sort of hot atmosphere, which is Watford against Luton. From a Premier League point of view, you would think it is quite a primitive stadium. The fans are right on top of you. It should be a bit of a leveler, but I'm confused as to why it hasn't been so far.
Yeah, I think it's quite small. There's no, I think those kind of stadiums that can be a bit of a cauldron, maybe you think about Upton Park back in the day, or you think about Goodison. They're relatively small stadiums, but they have roofs that kind of go over, and you feel like you're a bit compact, and the noise that helps in terms of the noise that the fans can create. And I haven't really got that sense from Luton when I've been there.
It's a bit more of a flat bottom saucepan or wok than a cauldron,
yes.
Isn't
yeah,
it?
That's exactly it.
That's right, a wok. Yeah. Or baking, like a baking dish.
No, it's got stands. I mean, like, it's not, it's not non-league. I think baking dish is a bit harsh. There's a little bit of sides to it. I'd accept, like, kind of Pyrex.
Yeah.
Pyrex jar.
High-sided.
Yeah, lasagna sort of thing you're cooking in.
Yeah. One quick word. I wanted to mention the last episode of the Athletic Football Podcast. It's a really good one, actually. I went into listening to it thinking, should we be doing this one about managers getting sacked, should all this sort of stuff, And I listened to it. It was an absolute joy to listen to, with Ayo Akinwoleri, Dom Fifield, Duncan Alexander and Jay Harris just discussing why no manager in the Premier League as yet has been sacked. And for all of the managers that are employed in the Premier League, we hope that continues. Just a quick prediction on this one, very quickly.
3-1 to Liverpool, but Luton's taken early lead.
Thank you. That was like Mystic Meg. Go on then, Luke.
I kind of agree with Nick. 3-0 to Liverpool.
3-0.
Sticking with 3-0.
Brilliant. Okay, now just a quick word on the big fixture in Europe this weekend. It is De Clásica. It is Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich. The sides sit fourth and second, respectively, with Bayer Leverkusen still top of the table. There's only 2 points between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich at the moment. So just to give us the lowdown on the game, The Athletic's German writer, Seb Stafford-Bloor. Here he is.
Interesting game, but really interesting time for the game to take place too. On Wednesday night, Bayern Munich were beaten by Saarbrücken in the Pokal. So Saarbrücken are from the German third division. So that was an almighty shock. And it's ratcheted up the pressure on Thomas Tuchel. During a season when actually Bayern haven't looked weak so much as they do fragile, systemically, I mean, because one of the themes from the year has been the absence of a number six, problem exacerbated by Joshua Kimmich's suspension. He was red carded against Darmstadt last weekend, so he'll miss this game. But there are issues in other departments too. Like, I think there's a lack of chemistry in the defence. Doesn't quite have the balance you'd expect, particularly when facing teams who transition well. And in attack, whilst obviously, of course, they have some really world-class players. Leroy Sané has had a brilliant season, probably the best of his career, certainly since coming back to Germany. Harry Kane has been, volume-wise, very, very good, even if not quite the force that he was at Spurs. Jamal Musiala is fit again and having an impact. Manuel Neuer is back in goal, and that makes a huge difference for Bayern. But even though they're unbeaten, it hasn't been very comprehensive, hasn't been very overwhelming. So unbeaten, but with an asterisk. And I think you'd say probably the same about Dortmund, because obviously Jude Bellingham's departure was going to hit them hard. And in his absence, they kind of tried to replace him through committee, brought in Marcel Sabitzer and Felix Nmecha. There are other sort of players who are stirring in the Dortmund lineup. Daniel Marlin started to play better. Karim Adeyemi is fit again and playing again. And Julian Brandt is fit again. Now, that's really, really important, because I think what you've always had with Dortmund is these world-class players in small pockets and in little areas of the team. I'll say with Sancho long gone, Haaland long gone, Bellingham freshly gone, Brandt is really the only world-class, certainly the world-class attacking player that Dortmund have, and having him fit again and available is a huge deal. And so it adds up to a really compelling fixture, because you have these two teams, clearly heavyweights, but at a time when they're imperfect and they have clear flaws that the other team could potentially exploit. So yeah, absolutely can't wait.
Yeah, and there'll be continued coverage of the Bundesliga, all the big leagues in Europe on The Athletic as always. Just before we go, quick word on some of the other games. We've spoken about Manchester United visiting Fulham. It feels like, how long has Erik ten Hag got, doesn't it? A little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they have been sort of relatively reluctant to sack managers before. Whether they could sort of afford to sack him, I'm not sure. There is he'll presumably owe quite a lot of money if they wanted to get rid of him now. I think there's probably a sense that he may be a problem, but not the problem. So you know, from a sort of rubbernecking, how bad can this get perspective, I suppose Fulham United will be one of the games to pay attention to this weekend.
Just a quick one on a quick prediction, because we haven't done it. How many goals are Man City going to score against Bournemouth, do you think, Boche?
I think they're going to score four.
Four? Jacob?
Seven. Let's go for a bit of razzmatazz here.
Feels like a classic 5-0.
A 5-0er.
Like a completely bloodless, over by the 30th minute, 5-0.
Yeah, okay. And one other one I think is worth pointing out. The Everton-Brighton game is going to be really interesting, because Everton seem to be building something under Sean Dyche. Brighton are just sort of teetering a little bit with all these games. Obviously, they're still doing well. They're in seventh and they're, you know, a solid side, a really attractive side and all that sort of stuff. But it'd be interesting to see which way that one goes, because if Everton could put together back-to-back wins, that would be a big boost for Dyche, wouldn't it?
Yeah, massively. I mean, this is the first time that they've actually had a decently sustained run of success. I mean, win-loss, win-loss. I mean, that's a great piece. That's great run of form for Everton. That's mid-table
yeah.
form.
Yeah.
This fixture gave me one of my great moments of joy of last season, where a terrible Everton team who really needed a win late in the season were playing Brighton. And at that point, it seemed like walking to a buzzsaw kind of willingly. And I was in Stockholm doing a piece on Alexander Isak and was stuck on an airport bus about 2 hours away from my destination after like 10 hours of travelling.
This is very evocative.
Managed to find a stream of it and kind of listened to this kind of complete through the looking glass moment of Everton looking like this really capable, stylish side, dismantling Roberto De Zerbi, the man of the day, which means it invariably won't happen now and I'll get my comeuppance as soon as I have any sort of belief, because that's how these things typically work. So
yeah.
I don't know if you're coming to me for a prediction, but I think I've sort of...
Yeah,
spoil
on,
what
no,
I'm
go
going
on,
to
let's
do.
Let's do it. Go on. How much? Only you.
Oh, Everton 0, Brighton 2.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much. Jacob, it's been great to have you on the show. Appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
I'm glad I just haven't attracted your ire as a debutant on this occasion. I'm sure in future appearances I might be getting the Bosch treatment. But
one appearance.
Thank you for having me today,
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. One appearance, it allows you to grow the thick skin of being in the hotbed that is the Athletic Football Podcast Weekend Preview Studio. What a load of nonsense. Bosch, once again, it's been a joy having you on the show. Are you going to come back?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. But I'll be armed.
Armed? Well, armed more than you are in that snazzy sweater that you've got on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll have personal insults for you, galore.
Yeah, fine. I've got a thick skin. I've needed it. And Nick, it's been a lovely, lovely joy just to be alongside you once again. Thanks.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Lovely. Cheers. Right. Io is going to be back with you on Monday. I will be back at it again for another weekend preview next Friday. You can sign up to The Athletic right now for just £1.99 a month in either pounds or dollars for an entire year at theathletic.com/footballpod. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.